from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
We have arrived to Monday. The weekend is over. The week is getting started, and it is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. I have you for the next 2 hours this evening. In some ways, 3 hours. We've got the Gas House Gang tonight from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and on Mondays, it's always the four of us, myself along with Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas. So that's going to be... We've got you covered. Nothing but sports here between now and 9 o'clock here on KMOX. We've got a busy hour this hour. A couple guests are going to join us. We're going to be joined by Gerard Hamilton. He covers Mizzou football for Power Mizzou. He's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. And then later on this hour, we're going to be joined by Michael Yam, who covers the NFL for a few different media outlets, including Sirius XM Radio, NFL Network, does some stuff for the CW as well. So he's going to join us coming up later on this hour. Here's kind of the things that we're talking about today. From a baseball standpoint, the awards for Rookie of the Year are out in the National League. It is Paul Skenes. He beats out Jackson Merrill. If I would have been voting, I would have put Merrill in front of Skenes. Interestingly enough, of all 30 of the votes for those two guys were the only guys who received either first or second place votes. Every single person voting for National League Rookie of the Year voted for either Skenes or Merrill, one and or two respectively. So those two got nothing but first place and second place votes. Skenes did get 23 of the first place votes. It was Merrill getting 7, and Skenes wins the award. Really tough to differentiate. This was, man, there were a lot of really good rookies this year in the National League. This is how good the National League rookie class was. Mason Wynn does not get a single vote. Doesn't get a single vote. Only four total individuals get votes, period, which is the lowest number ever in the history of the award. On the American League side of things, Luis Gill wins the American League Rookie of the Year award. I am not trying to be dismissive of anything that Gill did this year, but without a doubt, Mason Wynn on his same season would have received votes in the American League, and I think you can easily make the argument that he could have won the American League Rookie of the Year award. So, yeah, that's the way things go. So Paul Skenes wins it on the National League side of things. Congratulations to him. Just what he did this year was incredible. I mean, unprecedented. The only reason I kind of put Merrill in front of him was because of what he was doing for a team that was winning at a high level down the stretch of the season. Those votes do go in to they're locked in before the postseason gets started, so it doesn't really matter what happens in the postseason. Those awards are locked in a little bit before that. The St. Louis contingent who voted, we had two St. Louis voters, Jeff Jones from the Belleville News Democrat, Benjamin Hockman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. They both voted in the direction that it ended up going, where it was first place for Skenes, second place Merrill, and then third place Jackson Churio, who came in third from the Milwaukee Brewers, and that's the way that that all plays out. So we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up later on this hour and in the next hour as well. The new Hall of Fame ballot is out. Some interesting names on there for a first time. Some interesting names holding over as well. We'll go through that coming up as well. And if we have time, we might try to kind of jumpstart a conversation that you're going to hear later on during the Gas House Gang. What is the Cardinals' identity, and how does that impact fan enthusiasm? I think it's an interesting thing because, you know, sometimes if you're listening to this show, there's a good chance that you're a really big sports fan, and all you care about is if the Cardinals win or lose. And I appreciate that. There's nothing wrong with having that attitude, but that does not reflect like the overall population, right? So, if you're the Cardinals, what can you do to bring in more casual fans, to get more casual fans interested in what's going on? That kind of protects you if you're having a down season, where if all you care about is wins and losses, if the vast majority of people who show up to a game only care about wins and losses? Well, when you're losing more than you're winning, or if you're not winning enough, then attendance drops. We saw that over the last couple seasons. What kind of things can be done from a baseball standpoint that would impact kind of protecting yourself from that? And I do think it comes down to team identity. There's a conversation to be had, and I can tell you it's being had by individuals at the Cardinals about game day atmosphere and the things that they want to do at Busch Stadium. And I think that's important. You want the ballpark environment to be one that's fun, win or lose. It's still a ballpark. It's still entertainment. So that's not really where I'm going with this. It's more about the identity of the team and the things that you want out of the individual players and things like that. In many ways, the Cardinals, the way they've been put their head down and play baseball. And when you put your head down and play baseball, well, then if you're not winning, you don't really have much of an identity. And that's kind of what's happened, whereas opposed to other teams that are known for other things, even if they're winning or they're losing. So it's an interesting conversation to be had. We'll have it. We'll go pretty deep on that during the Gas House Gang this evening between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock. But we may try to touch on that a little bit before we get to that point. As always, if you want to chime in with us, you can do so. 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air. When we come back, we'll talk with Gerard Hamilton. He covers Missouri football for Power Mizzou, and he's with us in just a moment as we roll on. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. It was an interesting game for Missouri football this past weekend. It's kind of, you know, you look through the Missouri season, and there have been some wins that you haven't felt great about. The Boston College win, the Vanderbilt win. And then there's a loss where maybe you feel a little bit better about your team than you do in those other games. And I think that would be a good descriptor for Saturday's loss at South Carolina, 34-30. To join us to talk about it a bit, he writes for Power Mizzou, powermizzou.com. He is Gerard Hamilton. You follow him on Twitter, at Gerard C. Hamilton. Gerard, always appreciate you spending a little time with us here on KMOX. How are you?
Doing well. How you doing?
Doing all right. So, what's your takeaway from that game? Where, I mean, that fourth quarter was crazy. Missouri takes a couple leads every time. South Carolina, they had an answer. We saw some incredible plays made in that final quarter. That was a really, really entertaining final few moments of football.
Yeah, it's one of those losses where I know it kind of sung for the fans and obviously for the team, but I don't think it's, you know, as demoralizing as, you know, losses to A&M or Bama where a team doesn't show up or, you know, you have a major injury or something like that. It's like, it's just one of those games where it's like you realize the other team also has, you know, SEC scholarship players too. They're also a top 25 team, and they were ranked where they were ranked going into that game for a reason. So Missouri showed a lot of heart. That final offensive possession, well, the second to last offensive possession with Cook finding Burden, you know, kind of down that left sideline, and Burden makes the one hand catch. That's an amazing play, and it's, you almost feel bad for the defense because for the most part, they've been keeping them in a lot of games this year. And so it's one of those things, again, like South Carolina has playmakers too. Lenora Sellers, big day, breakout day. Obviously, Rocket Sanders and stuff like that. And so for this Missouri defense that's been so good for so long, you know, it just wasn't their day. And, you know, even though I think they were 8-0 the last couple of years in one score games, I mean, yes, eventually, I guess the team was, you know, going to break that streak. And so it's a heartbreaker for them, but it's just one where it's just like, I mean, it's kind of the game.
Do you give more credit to South Carolina offensively for their answers in the fourth quarter, or is there more blame for especially the secondary of Mizzou?
Both. I mean, I think it came out yesterday or today. I've been writing a lot of stories, but I wrote that one of the turning points of the game was 3rd and 10, about 7 minutes left to go, and we think Johnny Walker's going to have his second sack, and Sellers breaks out of it. And he completes it to the tight end. The tight end just gets tackled right over the line to gain. Then the next play is the 54-yard gain completion Sellers had. Secondary struggle. I mean, all of them had their moments where it was just like, this is, it's not good. And some of the worst ball they played all year. This in the Texas A&M game, Nick DeLoach, he had a pretty bad day. He gave up a couple 40-yard receptions, including that 54-yarder I just mentioned. Dre Norwood had a holding. He had a pass interference earlier in the game, had a holding that took away a sack. Dalen Carnell got beat on the deep ball for 43 yards. Marvin Burks was missing tackles. He had the blown coverage on the first touchdown. I mean, the secondary was not good whatsoever. But, again, South Carolina has to make those plays. They have to capitalize on that. It's not all on one side. So Missouri makes those mistakes, and South Carolina can't capitalize. And then what are we talking about? So it's a mix of both.
We know that Brady Cook is a tough, tough dude. Were you surprised that he ended up playing? And, I mean, not that he had a great game, but, man, he went out there, he battled, and obviously made some throws.
I actually thought he had a pretty decent day. Now, I personally, with my own eyes, felt like I saw it. There was two touchdowns that he could have thrown to Brett Norfleet. I think there's one in the first half and then one in the second half. One in the first half, I'm trying to think who he went to, but Norfleet looked like he was on somewhat of a wheel route or something like that. He was wide open. And then later in the second half, he had to step on his man and think Cook went straight to the goal line. Again, I can't remember exactly who he was throwing into, but he missed a couple of those throws. But I think, no, it doesn't surprise me that he ended up playing. I mean, this guy is kind of insane. I mean, going back to 2022, playing the whole season with a torn labrum and his throwing shoulder, I mean, that in itself is kind of crazy. So it's not a surprise that he played. I think he played, you know, pretty well. And again, 70 seconds away from leading a game-winning, two-score comeback for the second time in 4 weeks. That's how close they were. So he played pretty good, and I'm not surprised he found a way to play in the game.
The guy that we haven't talked about yet who put together just a spectacular performance was running back Nate Noel. He goes out, runs for 150 yards and a touchdown. He's been a little bit banged up recently. We haven't seen him impact the team, but it was on full display what he can do when healthy and how much he is able to impact the Tigers offensively.
Yeah, he opens up a different level in the run game as far as his shiftiness, his elusiveness, his ability to get out in space. I mean, his first step is incredible. It just felt like he was, you know, getting 5 yards per play. And I'm pretty sure he's running 5 or 6 yards per carry. I know there was a stretch on that second to last possession, the one that finishes with the burning touchdown, where 4 straight runs in a row, he got six yards. So, I mean, getting 24 yards on 4 straight carries when your team needs a touchdown, I mean, that's big time. So I had asked him earlier in the week how close he was to 100%, and he said he felt like he was pretty close, and he was. 27 for a buck 50 and a touchdown, I mean, that was huge. And the running backs, I think, were been doing all right with him, you know, kind of out of the lineup. But he kind of opens things up for the offense when he's on the field. I feel like he's usually the best or second best offensive player, or position player at least, on the field when he's healthy.
a lot of Mizzou fans that are listening to this right now probably don't feel great about a 7-3 season, especially because of the way two of those three losses went down against Texas A&M and also Alabama. But this couple winnable games coming up, Mississippi State has really struggled this year. Arkansas at home is winnable to finish out the year. This can still turn into a really, really good 9-3 season for this team.
Yeah, I mean, it could still be 9-3. I think that'll be the ninth time in school history that they have 9 wins. So, like, you can say you're disappointed, but saying it's a failure or a bad season, I think wouldn't be correct. I mean, that's not the case here. So you can get 9 wins, possibly, you know, you get in that bowl game, you get a 10th win. I think only 2 other times in history they've had back-to-back 10-win seasons. So if you can do that, that's a feat in itself. So I know the 12-team playoff gave so much hope, and thinking about how last year went and what would have happened if the playoff was that year and all that stuff. But, you know, I can't do nothing about it. But what you can do is look at the games you got in front of you and say, what can you accomplish? And I asked Brady Cook after the game, asked him about some of that stuff and what they can do going forward. And he was just like, we can focus on what's in front of us. So they're going to try to win out, try to get 9 wins, get that bowl game in, and try to get the 10th one and still make some type of history.
Gerard Hamilton covers Mizzou football for Power Mizzou. It's still relatively new, you guys being affiliated with 24/7 Sports. How's that affiliation going for everybody at Power Mizzou?
It's awesome. I think we all like it. I mean, get a lot of help. We get to do a lot of different things with a lot of different sites and teams and stuff like that. Obviously, a lot more videos, podcasts, and all that stuff, and being able to talk about the Tigers on a bigger platform has been great and much easier and smoother than I expected. Because when you make a site change, you think there's all these things that got to go on that you have to do. And I think there's a little bit more work, but I think we all feel like we're getting a lot more out of it. So it's been good.
Again, powermizzou.com is the website. He is Gerard Hamilton. Follow him on Twitter at Gerard C. Hamilton. You spell Gerard, J-A-R-O-D. Gerard, thanks so much for your time. Hopefully we'll catch up again real soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you.
Awesome. Very good. Gerard Hamilton joining us on the program. We appreciate him spending a few moments with us. Back-to-back guest here in the first hour of the program. Michael Yam covers the NFL for NFL Network, SiriusXM, and a few other outlets as well. I'll tell you what, this was a great football weekend. This was yesterday's action across the NFL was just really, really good from start to finish. We'll talk about that with Mike Yam and also get a bit of a preview of Monday Night Football. That's all coming up. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. I'll tell you what, it was, it was a great NFL Sunday yesterday. Maybe the best of the year. The week is going to wrap up tonight with a game that on paper doesn't look great, Houston-Dallas, but I guess you never know what may end up happening. Right now, we're happy to be able to go to the guest line, and we welcome on to the program someone who covers the NFL for multiple outlets, including NFL Network, SiriusXM. He is Michael Yam. You follow him on Twitter at Mike_Yam. Mike, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, Matt, always appreciate the invite, man. And you're right. On paper, this looks a certain way, this type of game, but there is a reason why they play it, and who knows? Maybe Dallas does figure something out.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Anytime things are going really, really bad, it feels like teams at some point are able to kind of, like, jump out of it. But maybe it hasn't gotten to its worst yet for the Cowboys. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. You know what's kind of crazy about this conversation? I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day, and he said, you know, the Lions should just hammer the Jags, right? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, this thing should be a bloodbath. It shouldn't be closed. And then the two of us started, like, just catching up about, you know, the teams and the rosters and the personnel. And obviously, Trevor Lawrence not playing, but Mac Jones has got starting experience. And we're sitting there going, can you imagine if? And then there's, like, that actual belief that, hey, maybe it could happen. I'm not suggesting that's the case tonight from a Dallas perspective, because I think Houston's playing for a lot right now. You know, the fact that they've had some stumbles, the fact that they could have five interceptions in a game against Jared Goff and still lose that game, those are the types of things where I think if I'm D'Amico Ryans, I'm pointing to, I'm saying, look, as we are in a funk right now, and this is an opportunity against a beaten-up Dallas Cowboys team that really shouldn't be in this game. Houston is a superior team. They have a superior roster. Their defense is better. And without Dak Prescott out on the football field, I don't know if they're in a running game that's been non-existent for most of the season. I just don't know the compelling argument for how you craft something based off of the evidence that says, hey, the Cowboys should win this game.
You've alluded to the Lions twice already, and with their big win yesterday combined with Kansas City's loss, Detroit is now the Super Bowl favorite, by according to most sports books. Are the Lions the best team in the NFL?
Yeah, I lean that way, and I've leaned that way for a few weeks right now. I know even before the Kansas City loss, people were pointing to that team. I just wasn't necessarily sold. I think the Chiefs, obviously, if they win the Super Bowl this year, no one is going to be surprised by that. But I just think through the first, you know, weeks of the season, they've been playing with fire. You know, during, you know, the undefeated run, they had eight comeback wins during that stretch. I mean, that to me speaks volumes. They're not dominating teams. I think the Lions have shown they can beat you different ways. They can beat you in a game where Jared Goff doesn't throw for 100 yards. They can beat you in a game where he throws five interceptions. They can beat you, you know, defensively where their defense is not only creating turnovers but scoring. They can beat you in a special teams way. I think top to bottom, you know, that roster looks great. Now, once again, I think Kansas City is in that mix. I've been called out by some of my colleagues at NFL Network because I've been a Ravens defender. I think Baltimore still, on paper to me, has arguably the best roster in the NFL. And, you know, had they not had, a fumble from Derrick Henry on the opening drive, two missed field goals and a missed two-point conversion, you know, they beat Pittsburgh on the road on Sunday. So I think the Ravens are in the mix. I think Buffalo's got to be in that conversation. But to me, the Lions right now have shown to at least me, and I think the rest of the NFL world, that they are on paper right now probably the best team to in the league.
So yesterday, between two games, you had four teams that are all AFC championship game contenders. Ravens, Steelers one, Chiefs, Bills the other. You had a fantastic comeback from the Bengals on Sunday Night Football. The Chargers eventually win that game. The Packers-Bears game, the finish to that, a walk-off block is just crazy. Does it get any better from start to finish for an NFL Sunday than what we saw yesterday?
No, how awesome. And by the way, Matt, doesn't it feel like every year we're talking about results like this, talking about these crazy finishes coming down to the wire? I wish I knew. I'd forgotten stat. Last season, just the margin of victory. I mean, we were talking about a ridiculous amount of one-possession games. This season, same conversation that we're having. And candidly, even last night, and I know you mentioned it, but you know, at halftime, I'm sitting there going, Cincinnati ain't winning this game. Like, that's not going to happen for this team. And the run that they went on, I thought Collinsworth put it best, and I actually feel bad because I do a bunch of different shows at NFL Network, and, you know, Cincinnati's a team that I've been high on all year, and I've been disappointed, and I've tried to come up with the reasoning behind some of these close losses. But last night, for them to lose the way that they did, it not only is heartbreaking, but I don't know the path for them. I know the schedule lightens up, but they're going to need so much help to get into the postseason. But to your point, it's been an awesome year watching these games.
And I feel bad for the Bengals too, because they get that win. Man, they are right there. There's a path for them to get there, and they're a very scary team going into the playoffs. Instead, I hate to put all the blame on a kicker, but you got a kicker who misses a couple field goals. Either one of them would have probably won the game for them, and we're having this conversation today.
You know what's wild about some of these end of game situations? The kicking game, we've almost taken for granted that these guys are executing, because, you know, when I was growing up, you know, a 50-yarder was like, whoa, that's insane. Now you got dudes that are going plus 50, and it looks easy. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen some performances. Look, Justin Tucker, one of those guys, we've talked about him as maybe the best kicker in NFL history. He's had a little bit of a rough season. Young Wei Koo with the Falcons has had some misses, which have broken my heart a little bit. And then last night, you know, to your point, to close out, but then also to get an opportunity late in that game. They got the ball back, and I'm thinking, oh, Joe Cool's going to deliver in this game, and they still lose. And I think, to me, that's what, you know, is the sign also of, you know, being a good team. Like, when the Chiefs were running, this season before yesterday's loss, I'm sitting there and I made this analogy to a couple friends of mine. I was like, you know, it feels like the Yankees of the 90s when they're winning these World Series, right? Like all of these things that need to happen and go in their favor are just sort of dropping into their lap. And that was how the Chiefs season has gone so far this season. But the good teams figure out ways to get it done. And the Chargers last night against Cincinnati, with their backs against the wall, you know, they got it done.
We spend so much time talking Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, Ravens in the AFC. That Chargers team is going to be a tough out in the playoffs, assuming they get there.
Oh, man. Tell me the squad that is not going to be scared going up against that team. I know you obviously watch the game, and I'm sure a lot of the guys listening right now and the gals that are listening who are paying attention. Did you guys notice that defense is swarming? Mm-hmm. They do not miss tackles. It felt like every time a guy had a reception, first of all, Joe Burrow was under duress, so I give a ton of credit to the pressure that the Chargers were able to generate. But it just felt like they were everywhere. And it reminded me a little bit of the Ravens defense from last season. They look fast. They don't miss tackles. It's swarming to the football. They play this thing dirty. And Justin Herbert all of a sudden is starting to find a little bit of a groove here. And that running game is strong. Like the Chargers are, I think the Chargers and the Eagles are probably the two teams that we don't talk enough about nationally. I think there's some people that might push back maybe on the Eagles thing. But, in my mind, I just sort of felt like the Eagles were a little forgotten. I think now, because of Saquon's performances, they're becoming a little bit more discussed.
Well, they have a track record, too. Like, that's a smart organization. And I know they only won two of their first four games. But haven't they earned and don't they deserve a little bit of grace even if they have a 2-2 start?
Totally. And on top of that, think about the injuries that team has had to overcome. And look, there's every team, and people will be like, Mike, every team in the NFL's got injuries. I get that. But there's some teams that completely collapse. And I'm not saying that was the case for them. In fact, they started winning once they got healthy again. But I give a lot of credit to a team like Tampa Bay. I mean, tell me the team that can navigate the amount of injuries to key personnel at the skill position spot and still make it interesting. Now, they haven't won these games, and I get that. But my God, like down the stretch, they have an opportunity. And I think there's a lot of teams in the NFL that don't have the moxie, don't have the mental fortitude, and really the depth to compete when stars go down. And once again, I get it. Tampa Bay hasn't won some of these games, but they're an organization that I point to that says, hey, not folding, and had an opportunity to win some of these matchups, even without the likes of Evans and Godwin.
Last thing for you, we're talking with Michael Yam, NFL Network. The Giants announced that Daniel Jones is being benched, their quarterback. He goes to their third-string spot. They do that to protect themselves against injury so they can get out from under that contract at the end of the season. But they go to Tommy DeVito as opposed to Drew Lock. We've seen some good things from Lock during his career. Is this a clear – is this a combination tank job and also protection job with Jones? Like, just the way this whole decision process goes on, it feels like this isn't what's the best for the NFL.
Yeah, Matt, I'm the worst person to ask this question to, because when you bring up the Giants, there's like the fan cap that I'm trying to take off while I answer this question, because I grew up in northern New Jersey and I went to school and college in New York. So I'm a Giants fan, and this has been tough. I'd be lying if I said to you, like, I'm okay with them getting a really high draft pick. And, you know, hopefully they're going to be able to, you know, pick one of these top ranked quarterbacks, whether it's a Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. I think there's, you know, a pretty decent chance that, and they're going to be picking in that top three, and I'll have their say. That said, look, Tommy Cutlets is a great story. Went to high school, one of my rival high schools, just not too far from Giant Stadium in New Jersey. But, you know, to me, I think the one thing that the league really thrives on is, you know, having its stars out there. And the problem is right now that there's just so many questions around what this offense could look like. And I think there's going to be changes in New York. I'd be heartbroken if Brian Daboll loses his job. And I know the job that Joe Shane has done, he's under the microscope because of the way Saquon Barkley has played and them not being able to get there. The only pushback, and once again, I wanted them to get a deal done with Saquon. They made an offer. They made multiple offers, and they couldn't. It didn't get done with Saquon. He's playing the best football of his entire career. Like, this looks like, you know, a better version of 2018 Saquon, which makes all of this conversation tougher. But Daniel Jones, there's been times where I don't think it's his fault on the football field. And there are other times that there's these head-scratching moments. But I do wish that, you know, the Giants hopefully are just in a situation to compete at a high level. And Daboll's got to feel like, you know what, maybe Tommy Cutlets gives us the best chance.
Michael Yam covers the NFL, NFL Network, Sirius XM on Twitter, at Mike_Yam. Mike, appreciate you taking some time. This is great stuff. Hopefully we can catch up again in the future.
Anytime. Really appreciate it, Matt. Thanks again.
Awesome. Very good. That's Michael Yam joining us on the program. Appreciate him spending a moment or so with us. Again, I thought yesterday was great. I thought it. Yesterday was one of those days where you just sit down on the couch and you watch good game after. And you finally get to the final game, Sunday Night Football, and it looks like it's going to be a stinker. And then, boom, the Bengals turn it on, and that just turned into an amazing game with great drama. Like, sometimes we like to talk about, like, when one team gets up really big and then the other team makes a big comeback, that's a great game. A lot of times those aren't actually great games. It's a great comeback, but it's a stinker of a game because one team is up by a ton and then another team slowly but surely gets back into it, but they're only into it for, you know, really back into it. It's only like a competitive game for the final few moments of the game. That's not a good game. There's good moments, a good comeback. The thing that was interesting about Sunday Night Football last night was it was the scenario where one team gets up big and the other team starts coming back, but it truly turned into a great game because you had the drama of the missed kicks. You had each team with opportunities late with drives. You know, Cincinnati did just enough, I guess, there in the first half kind of to make you feel like maybe they could do something. So that turned into a great game as well. It was a great day in the NFL yesterday. One more break. We will come back and we'll wrap up hour number one of the program. My name is Matt Pauley. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on KMOX. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line. I wanted to talk a little bit of time here in this final segment. I don't have enough time to get into it quite as much as I wanted to, so we'll probably extend it over into the 7 o'clock hour. I'd be curious to hear from you. You can text in if you would like at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Did you watch the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight? And were you anything other than completely disappointed by it? I mean, they got people to watch. I guess we should have known what was going to come out of it. I was disappointed in it. I am of the belief that there was a gentleman's agreement between Tyson and Paul on the way it was going to go down. I'm not using the word fixed, but I think it essentially was just that. And it was, for those of us who like remember Tyson for who Mike Tyson was, it was kind of disappointing. It was fun to see him, but that fun ended very, very quickly. So I want to spend a little bit of time on this. I was watching it on Sunday night. Again, if you've got any thoughts on it, we'll welcome your text messages in at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Something like 65 million people tuned into that thing, or at least attempted to tune into that thing. It floors me that a company like Netflix can't figure out live streaming. And I know the anti-streaming people out there are like using this as an opportunity to puff out their chest. You know who doesn't have a problem? And admittedly, maybe if they had an event that had 65 million people watching it, maybe it'd be different. But all we did last week was talk about how this is going to be the boxing match with the biggest audience ever in the history of boxing, which is kind of sad when we say that. But Netflix should have known what the audience was going to be or what it could be, and they should have had the technology ready to go. If you watch a game, a soccer game or a baseball game on Apple TV, this doesn't happen. If you watch a football game on Peacock, this doesn't happen. I watched the Blues, one of the Blues games. I watched, it was the their game against the Sabres on Friday. That was on Hulu. I watched it on Hulu. There's no issue there. Like, across the board, when I was watching NFL football yesterday, I was down in my office in my basement where I get horrible TV reception and just have a little streaming device on my TV. So I watched it on Paramount Plus. No problem there. So I don't understand why all these other streaming services, which we think of as being kind of lesser compared to Netflix, they have no problem getting the streaming thing figured out, but Netflix can't. And now Netflix has an NFL doubleheader that's going to be coming up on Christmas. We'll continue to talk through this Tyson Paul fight. We'll do that after the 7 o'clock news here on KMOX.